第一天，六点五至九分范文。教育类范文二。
Some people believe that children are given too much free time. They feel that this time should be used to do more schoolwork. How do you think children should spend their free time?
A. To a large extent, I believe that children are given too much free time. Free time, in my opinion, refers to time that is not spent under the direct supervision of a parent, teacher, or a person entrusted with the responsibility of bringing up the child. Such time is often spent on several things, such as watching television, playing with friends, going to parties, doing homework,and playing games on their own, among others. Among all of the above activities, a child could either be influenced by his or her peer group, especially when left without attention, or be influenced by what he or she watches on TV. Most of which are those not meant to be viewed by the child's age group.In my opinion, most of the formative years of a child should be spent doing schoolwork or engaging in recreational activities that would develop the child emotionally and mentally. I believe this strongly because at a young age, a child is quick to grasp most of what is seen or heard.
B. I agree that the time children spend on schoolwork offers them more meaningful activities than their idle free time does. However, I also believe that children should be able to decide for themselves how to spend their free time. Children are at the best stage in life to gain knowledge, develop skills, and form good learning and social habits.If this precious period is mainly spent on idle activities such as watching TV and playing video games, which are many children's favorite hobbies, they will have to do much more to compete with their peers when they become adults. What can be more worrying about giving children too much free time is the increase in children's behavior problems. Nowadays, it is common for parents to work long hours.The children who often spend time alone after school are more likely to suffer from loneliness and boredom and develop antisocial behavior. By contrast, not only does schoolwork include listening to lectures and writing reports, it also offers a wide range of interactive activities, such as group discussions and team presentations. These activities can improve children's social and cooperative skills. On the other hand,I believe that children should be given enough freedom in deciding how to use their free time. The skill of managing time properly is as important as doing academic exercises. Providing children with the right to choose what they do after school will also develop their sense of responsibility. With advice from parents and teachers, children can choose meaningful activities for their free time, including art projects,sports and volunteer work. In conclusion, I think that students should be encouraged to spend more time on schoolwork. At the same time, they should be given guidance about how to use their free time properly.
教育类范文三。
In many countries, good schools and medical facilities are available only in cities. Some people think that university graduates who become new teachers and doctors should work in rural areas for a few years. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
There is still a wide gap between the educational and medical facilities in urban and rural areas. Having seen this, some people suggest that new teachers and doctors work in the rural area for some time. I think this may lead to some practical problems. I agree that sending new teachers and doctors to the rural area may help them to develop a strong sense of responsibility. They will feel it is a pity that the rural residents suffer from poor teaching and medical services, and they have the responsibility to change the situation. Their knowledge and skills gained through higher education can help them to contribute to improvements in local education and healthcare. However, sending university graduates to rural areas can also cause significant problems. Many of them will feel frustrated if they are forced to work in areas where they may have difficulty adapting to the local lifestyles. Even if they can finally get used to the underdeveloped facilities there, they will find it difficult to readapt to the life in cities when they come back. Much pressure will also be felt if they return to cities but have problems operating the teaching tools or medical equipment in cities, which are more advanced and harder to use. These teachers and doctors may even think of themselves as complete failures because they may be unable to keep up with their colleagues after spending some time in rural areas. To conclude, I tend to believe that new teachers' and new doctors' own choices should be respected when they are asked to work in rural areas. Some people think that intelligent students should be educated together with other students. Others, however, think that they should be educated separately. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
Many intelligent students today attend gifted programs and are educated separately from their peers. Some people think that providing intelligent students with special courses makes practical sense. Students of high intelligence need a more challenging curriculum because they are fast learners and their learning process requires little repetition of the information taught by their teachers. If they find the curriculum too easy, they will end up learning little or nothing at all. In fact, many students who are inattentive in class are intelligent ones. Regular courses simply fail to attract their attention. Some of them even feel that their school time is wasted. From a psychological perspective, intelligent students also feel more comfortable if there are special classes for them. Many of them not only have unique learning styles, but also have academic and personal interests that are very different from those of less intelligent students. Spending all their school time with their average peers would make them feel isolated and become oversensitive. Many educationalists, however, argue that the disadvantages of placing intelligent students in separate classes are obvious. Regular classes will be drained of academic role models. Separating students according to their IQ levels may even send a message to those who take regular courses that their work is not valued by the school, which is very likely to reduce their self-confidence and damage their self-esteem. Personally, I would suggest that intelligent students spend most of their school time with their peers, but in addition to regular classes, they should also be encouraged to take electives that can challenge them mentally.
Some
people think that schools should only teach students academic knowledge. Others, however, think that they should also teach students to judge what is right and wrong. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
People have different views about the main purpose of schools. Some teachers and parents believe that schools should only focus on providing students with academic knowledge. They argue that academic knowledge provides an important foundation for a wide range of job skills. For example, students who know more about algebra and calculus would have a better chance of finding a job in the fields of statistics and accounting because it is easier for them to master the advanced skills required. Also, many teachers see teaching academic knowledge as their main goal because assessment of students' academic knowledge is often considered more objective than assessment of other abilities and skills. The popularity of school rankings based on standardized test results shows many parents agree with the teachers on that. However, some other people argue that apart from academic knowledge, schools should also teach students how to distinguish between right and wrong and behave well. Students are still immature emotionally and socially. If schools do not teach moral values, such as respect, responsibility, and self-discipline, students may end up using their knowledge for morally wrong purposes. For example, increasing numbers of young hackers use their computer knowledge to invade other people's computers. The fact that many of them describe their acts as unintentional is good proof of the importance of teaching students to tell right from wrong. My own opinion is that teaching academic knowledge should be the priority of schools because they are the main institutions where children can gain it. At the same time, students should be provided with moral and character education programs to ensure that apart from benefiting themselves, the knowledge that they gain will also benefit others.
Some people think that students should only study science subjects. Other subjects are not important to them. To what extent do you agree or disagree? Some people suggest that students only study science subjects. Although I agree that science subjects are important, I think that students should also study a variety of other subjects. On the one hand, science subjects such as physics, chemistry, and biology should be core subjects on the school curriculum. These subjects help students to better understand the natural world and how it can be improved. For example, science teachers can teach students about the causes of global warming and what they can do to reduce global warming. The knowledge gained through science subjects also prepares students for a wide range of careers, such as careers in science, technology, engineering, or medicine. On the other hand, science subjects should not be the only subjects that students study. Many other subjects can also help students to gain knowledge and develop important skills. For example, history lessons can help students to gain a better understanding of their own nation as well as other nations, and help them to improve their critical thinking skills. Also, art lessons encourage students' imaginations and teach them to solve problems creatively. Furthermore, science subjects would not serve their purpose well without the help of other subjects on the school curriculum. For example, it is hard to imagine that students can report the results of their scientific experiments clearly in their papers if they have not learned academic writing and language classes. In conclusion, I would argue that a good curriculum should be balanced and cover a wide range of areas, including natural sciences, social studies, languages, and arts.
Pressure on students is increasing, and they are pushed to hard work in their studies at a young age. Do you think this is a positive or a negative development?
Students today experience more stress at school and have to start working hard at a young age. I think that overall this is a positive trend. Young students have better memories than adult students. They can gain a large amount of basic knowledge if they concentrate on their studies. The knowledge base that they build during this period can help them with gaining more advanced knowledge and developing more complex skills later in life. Schools are also places where young students form study habits. Studying hard and trying to achieve good marks in examinations will help them to become more organized, manage their time more efficiently, and handle stress better. These will be essential habits and skills for their future academic achievements, professional successes, and even a lifetime of continuous learning. Admittedly, high levels of stress are counterproductive to learning. Young students may find it hard for them to concentrate on their studies or to think clearly if they are under too much stress. However, by frequently communicating with their children about their problems and difficulties at school and cooperating with teachers closely in educating their children, parents can help their children to relieve stress and reduce stress to a healthy level. For the reasons mentioned above, it seems to me that a reasonable level of stress can help young students to achieve their academic potential. Parents and teachers should communicate with children regularly to help them to cope with stress. Also, schools should provide students with interesting extracurricular activities to help them to reduce stress and anxiety. Some people think that school subjects and course contents should be decided by the authorities, such as the central government. However, others think that students should decide these for themselves. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
Education has been viewed as an essential part of individual and social development. An educational issue that has been under debate is who should make the decisions on what students study. Some people think that students can gain benefits from a standard curriculum set by the government. Learners need a common foundation before they acquire more advanced knowledge. Without opportunities to gain basic knowledge through courses selected by the government, students would find it difficult to further their education. Subjects and course contents decided by the government also help schools to better prepare a competitive workforce for the future. Students' own selections of courses may be random and purely interest-based. By contrast, the government can collect statistics on the labour market and hire experts to design curricula that suit the labour market demand well. Other people, however, argue that an official curriculum is not always more productive. Individual students have different characters and abilities, and students in different schools may have varied needs. If all the students in the same grade in a region or country are required to take the same courses and study the same contents, their potential is unlikely to be fully achieved. Students may even feel frustrated with learning, because many of the required courses do not interest or challenge them. My own view is that primary school students should take courses that governments choose for them, because they tend to lack the ability to find out courses that will best serve their needs. On the secondary level, however, schools should encourage students to participate in the decision-making process of designing the curriculum. Only in this way can secondary schools provide their students with curricula that can help them to fully explore their academic potential. Universities should accept equal numbers of male and female students in every subject. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
I am opposed to the idea that universities should accept the same number of male and female students for all subjects. The reasons why some universities do this are clear: to show respect for gender equality and to encourage interaction between men and women in the classroom. These aims are worthwhile, and having the same number of men and women can ensure they are achieved. However, I believe this approach overlooks two important aspects of higher education. Firstly, it is rather unlikely that an equal number of men and women will want to enrol on each subject. Although the old belief that boys and girls are naturally better in different subjects may be unfounded, it is almost always true that a higher proportion of male students are attracted to math-intensive subjects such as computer programming, statistics, and civil engineering, while a higher proportion of female students are interested in caregiving-related subjects such as special education and nursing. As a result, making sure that each subject accepts equal numbers of male and female students would be difficult. Secondly, encouraging interaction between men and women in classes does not mean there must be equal numbers of each for every subject. If a class has many female students feeling that it is hard for them to compete with their male classmates, or vice versa, such feelings will only serve to reduce interaction and result in even more gender prejudice. The course withdrawal rate is also likely to be higher than that of subjects on which students are free to enrol. For these reasons, I believe that to achieve gender equality, universities should allow students to choose subjects freely so that they can enrol on subjects in which they are really interested. Students from rural areas often find it difficult to access university education. Some people think that universities should make higher education easier for them to access. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
Some people think that universities should try to make higher education more easily accessible to students from rural areas. I completely agree with their view. Rural students are more likely to face financial challenges in pursuing higher education than urban students. The average income of rural families is significantly lower than that of urban families. This means that many rural parents are not able to provide their children with enough money to cover university tuition costs. Universities should therefore provide more money as need-based aid to students from rural areas to ease their financial burden and help them to concentrate on their studies. Primary and secondary schools in rural areas are also at a disadvantage in terms of equipment and teaching staff. As the gap between the standards of living in urban and rural areas has been growing over the past decades, it is now harder for rural schools to get enough funding for advanced teaching equipment or to recruit competent teachers. Students do not have the opportunities to achieve their academic potential at these schools. Thus, in the university admission process, universities should have admission requirements that take the rural origin students' educational background into consideration to ensure that a fair number of rural origin students can be admitted. Universities should also provide students from rural areas with special academic orientation programs and help them to become familiar with the teaching technology and methods that urban students have been exposed to. In conclusion, although all students should be treated as equals, I believe that universities should introduce special financial and academic policies to ensure that students from rural areas can have the opportunities to fulfill their academic potential through higher education.
教育类范文十一。
Students who are not talented in foreign language learning should not be required to study a foreign language. Do you agree or disagree?
Learning a foreign language is not an easy task. However, I disagree with the idea that students who do not have a talent for foreign language learning should not be required to study foreign languages. Learning a foreign language makes students more intelligent. When they study a foreign language, they need to memorize new words and phrases and analyze a wide range of sentence structures. This helps to improve their memory and develop their analytical skills. Also, as international business and trade is increasingly important to the economy of most countries, bilingual people are in high demand in many professions. All students, regardless of whether they have talent for foreign language learning, should take foreign language courses, which can prepare them for employment in the global economy. It is true that some students may find studying a foreign language difficult and frustrating. The difficulties and frustration that they experience may even affect their study of other academic subjects. However, I would argue that many of them find foreign language learning difficult because their teachers fail to stimulate their interest in the foreign language. A child's talent for foreign language learning may also be hard to accurately assess at such an early age. If all students who are considered untalented at learning a foreign language were allowed to drop the foreign language class freely, much latent talent for foreign language learning would be wasted. In conclusion, I believe that all students should be required to take foreign language courses. At the same time, students who find it difficult to learn foreign languages should be given more help so that they can also achieve their potential in foreign language learning. Some people say that the only reason for learning a foreign language is in order to travel to or work in a foreign country. Others say that these are not the only reasons why someone should learn a foreign language. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion. Many may say, and I agree, that today's society has almost erased all its borders and soon will become limitless in what concerns travelling for both work and pleasure. Therefore, if this is to happen, then learning a new language is necessary. Nowadays, learning a new language for the purpose of working in other countries seems to become more and more popular. Adults in need of money or recognition are trying to pursue their happiness far away from home. Also, the days of employers looking only for capable people have gone. It seems that today's employers are looking not only for multi-skilled employees, but they also want people who know more than their mother tongue. Sooner or later, those who omitted learning are more prone to become jobless. However, to my mind, a new language should not be learnt just for travelling or working in a foreign country. A foreign language should help learners broaden their minds. By this I mean that the new language should and will allow learners to understand more about the world itself, and maybe their ancestors' ways of thinking and acting. Needless to say, knowing another language will help us when it comes to understanding the human race, because language is the first poem of a country. All of this being said, I believe that learning a different language should be not only for satisfying our physical needs, like money, but also our moral needs, because never before had such a big thirst for knowledge been displayed.
Education 13.
The amount of money for postgraduate research is limited. Some people think that financial support from the government should only be provided for postgraduate scientific research rather than postgraduate research on less useful subjects. Do you agree or disagree?
In recent years, most of the government funding for postgraduate research has been provided to students who study natural sciences or engineering, while postgraduate research in other fields, such as the arts and humanities, has been seriously underfunded. I believe that postgraduate funding should be distributed more fairly across different fields. I agree that the funding needs of scientific research conducted by postgraduate students should be met. Without plenty of hands-on research experience, science and engineering students would never become truly familiar with scientific experiments and methods, which means there would not be enough qualified scientists or engineers in the future. The results of postgraduate scientific research can also be published in scientific journals and directly contribute to new discoveries and inventions. Another factor that should be considered is that scientific research is often conducted in laboratories. As a result, scientific research generally costs more than research in other fields, which can often be performed without expensive equipment. At the same time, I would argue that the funding needs of postgraduate research in other fields should not be neglected by government granting agencies. Doing postgraduate research helps humanities and arts students to find the answers to difficult research questions in their areas of interest. Their research findings increase our knowledge about society, history, and culture. Postgraduate research in these fields also trains the next generation of experts on the arts and humanities, such as historians, museum curators, philosophers, and professors in these fields. In the future, they will continue to help their nation appreciate and explore the arts and humanities. For the reasons mentioned above, I believe that financial support from the government should ensure equal research opportunities for postgraduate students who study natural sciences or engineering and postgraduate students who study the arts or humanities. University students should not only spend time studying, but also take part in other activities. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
In my country, many university students strive for high academic performance, but do not spend much time on non-academic activities. However, I personally think that they should be encouraged to achieve a good balance between academic studies and other activities.
Participation in non-academic activities has several benefits for university students. Firstly, the experience gained in social activities, including community service, marketing surveys, and volunteer work, can help students to better understand society and their relationships with it. These activities also improve their communication skills and teamwork skills. Secondly, unlike academic activities, which are generally stressful, extracurricular activities, such as sports and artistic activities, are usually fun and enjoyable. Participation in these activities can help students to reduce stress and anxiety. Thirdly, some extracurricular activities can help to boost students' academic performance. For example, playing chess improves students' logical and critical thinking abilities, while writing for the university newspaper helps students to develop their writing and analytical skills, which are also important skills for academic success. On the other hand, academic study should still be the top priority of university students. A solid academic knowledge base is important for them to meet the challenges presented by the knowledge-based economy. It also prepares them for employment and career success. The opportunity to use a wide variety of educational resources at university is invaluable, a fact that many university students may appreciate only after they graduate.
I would argue, therefore, that university students should be encouraged to explore a wide range of academic and non-academic activities, not only because this makes them happier and healthier, but also because these activities together form a truly productive learning process. Some people think that children should start school at the age of 6 or 7, while others think that children should start school as young as possible. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
In many countries today, children start primary school at the age of 6. However, people have different views about the best age for them to start school. Some people believe that children should stay at home until they are 6 or 7 years old. This idea is based on the belief that parents are children's best early teachers. Parents' interaction with them can build their confidence, stimulate their language development, and encourage them to solve problems creatively. It can also be argued that some children are not mature enough for school before the age of 6 or 7. If they attend school too early, they may develop behavior problems, such as being easily distracted and breaking school rules. Other people, including many parents, believe that an earlier school starting age is beneficial to children's later development. They argue that children's need for social relationships is no less than that of adults. Human beings are by nature social. Children should begin to develop their social skills through the communication with their peers and their teachers as early as possible. After the age of 3, when young children can generally understand adults' instructions, they should go to school and become socialized. Also, it is reasonable that children start receiving systematically planned education earlier, in an age of information explosion, when people need to gain much more knowledge than people did in the past. My own view is that with a more relaxed and understanding classroom atmosphere, school life should start as early as possible, which makes children better prepared for future competition in many areas. At the age of 3 or 4, children can begin to attend half-day school sessions. Then, at the age of 5, they should become full-time students. The qualities that a person needs to become successful cannot be learned at university or in a similar academic institution. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
Success in different areas may require different qualities. However, I would argue that for most people, universities and similar educational institutions can provide the learning experiences necessary for developing the qualities that they need to succeed. Universities offer a wide variety of learning opportunities. Academic activities such as listening to lectures, taking notes, doing assignments, and preparing for examinations not only provide students with important specialized knowledge, but also encourage hard work, self-discipline, focus, and enthusiasm for learning. These qualities help students to continue gaining new knowledge and skills even after leaving university, thus making them more successful in their future careers. Studying at university also helps students to think more independently and critically. For example, research projects encourage students to explore research questions, form their own ideas, and develop their own explanations and solutions. Independent thinking, developed over the process, is important to success because inventions and innovations today require the courage to challenge old ideas and the desire to find new and better answers to problems. Another benefit of higher education is that it makes students more socially competent. Class discussions and seminars allow students to exchange ideas and viewpoints, while group assignments provide them with opportunities to cooperate and work as teams. Students also become more open-minded and tolerant towards opinions different from their own. These are essential qualities for success in the increasingly teamwork-oriented and multicultural workplace. In conclusion, higher education today develops the desire for lifelong learning, independent thinking, and team spirit. These are the most important qualities for success in a knowledge-based, fast-changing, and culturally diverse society. Some people think that a sense of competition in children should be encouraged. Others believe that children who are taught to cooperate become more useful adults. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
In this essay, I will discuss whether the education system should encourage cooperative or competitive learning among students. Some people argue that competition should be stressed in schools. They think that being competitive is human nature and focuses students on the pursuit of their own goals. Students strive to excel at competition in studies, sports, or other extracurricular activities, such as art contests and debates. This can help them to achieve their academic, athletic, and artistic potential. However, a highly competitive learning environment may breed mistrust and unhealthy competition among students. For example, academic competition may lead to long hours of cramming, cheating, or even a nervous breakdown, as the competition makes students feel that they are not in control of their own lives. Others are in favor of building a cooperative environment at school. They believe that cooperation develops goodwill and a sense of community and belonging among students. This helps them to discover their common goals and appreciate the value of these goals. A cooperative environment also encourages students to exchange information and ideas freely. In such an environment, students tend to participate fully in group activities, such as group presentations and team sports. These activities require students to work as a team towards common goals. As a result, students who are educated in a cooperative environment are more likely to become contributing members of their community and society. I personally believe, although competition may lead to higher students' achievement, cooperation should always remain at the core of education, because it helps schools to produce open-minded and responsible individuals. Some people think that physical education should be a compulsory subject at schools. Do you agree or disagree?
Some people believe that physical education should be a mandatory school subject. I completely agree with this view. Participation in sports helps students to improve their fitness. Students today increasingly depend on electronic devices for entertainment, which has caused their rates of obesity and high blood pressure to rise. PE class helps them to improve their health, increase their energy, and most importantly, help them to achieve a better balanced, more active lifestyle that will continue into adulthood. Another benefit of physical education is the positive character traits developed by it. Team sports, including basketball, volleyball, and soccer, require children to think of their team as a whole and coordinate their efforts to win the game. This effectively develops their interpersonal and teamwork skills. Also, participation in individual sports such as tennis and gymnastics helps students to develop the spirit of fair play and respect for their competitors. Some people are concerned that physical education may distract students from their studies. I would argue that a proper amount of physical activity is, in fact, beneficial to the academic performance of students. Sitting for several hours on end works against learning because it makes the learner physically and mentally tired. By contrast, playing sports after a long study session gives the brain the recharging time that it needs, thus improving students' learning efficiency. For the reasons mentioned above, I believe that physical education should be a mandatory subject at schools, even for students who are involved in after-school physical activity on a regular basis. Some people think that the main purpose of schools is to turn children into good citizens and workers rather than benefit them as individuals. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
Some people think that schools should focus on preparing students for their future responsibilities as citizens and workers rather than on benefiting students as individuals. However, I would argue that both these goals are important to the success of schools. On the one hand, the effort to turn students into good citizens and workers helps schools to fulfill their social responsibility. Most schools are funded with tax money paid by citizens and businesses. Schools, therefore, should help students to develop a strong sense of social responsibility and social skills that will contribute back to the development of their community and their country. For example, in civics class, students can be taught about the rights and duties of citizens, while team sports in PE class help them to improve their skills to work with others. Schools should also provide training courses that prepare students for the labour market. In this way, schools help to prepare a competitive workforce for their country's future economic growth. On the other hand, it is important that schools try to benefit their students as individuals. If schools only focus on their social responsibility and ignore students' own interests and career goals, they may fail to provide courses and training opportunities that students are interested in. This can lead to inefficient and unproductive learning and defeat the social purpose of schools. Students may even find education that ignores their needs frustrating and leave school with negative attitudes. In conclusion, schools should not only aim to produce responsible citizens and competent workers, but also try to ensure that students are treated as valued individuals and can have their individual needs met. Children who are brought up in families that do not have large amounts of money are better prepared to deal with the problems of adult life than children brought up by wealthy parents. To what extent do you agree or disagree with this opinion? I do agree with the statement that children brought up in poor families are better prepared to deal with the problems of adult life than children brought up by wealthy parents. Children of poor parents are prematurely exposed to the problems of adult life, for example, learning to survive on a low family income and sacrificing luxuries for essential items. These children begin to see the realities of life in their home or social environment. Their parents' own struggles serve as an example to them. These children are taught necessary skills for survival as an adult from a very early age. Many children, for example, work at weekends or on holidays to either collect some pocket money or even contribute to their family income. A good example is the children who accompany their parents to sell produce at the market. They make a direct contribution to their families in terms of labor and income. Children of poor families also are highly motivated. They tend to set high goals to improve their economic and social situation. A relevant example would be Mr. Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft Corporation. He had an impoverished background, but he used his talent and motivation to set up the world's largest computer organization. However, there are some problems that children from poor backgrounds do encounter. Many of these children who are robbed of their childhood, for example, while working, may feel cheated. They often turn to crime. This, however, is a small group. In summary, children with impoverished backgrounds are able to deal with problems of adult life because of early exposure, family role models, and sheer motivation. Using a computer every day can have more negative than positive effects on children. Do you agree or disagree?
I tend to agree that young children can be negatively affected by too much time spent on the computer every day. This is partly because sitting in front of a screen for too long can be damaging to both the eyes and the physical posture of a young child, regardless of what they are using the computer for. The main concern is about the type of computer activities that attract children. These are often electronic games that tend to be very intense and rather violent. The player is usually the hero of the game, and too much exposure can encourage children to be self-centered and insensitive to others. Even when children use a computer for other purposes, such as getting information or emailing friends, it is no substitute for human interaction. Spending time with other children and sharing experiences is an important part of a child's development that cannot be provided by a computer. In spite of this, the obvious benefits of computer skills for young children cannot be denied. Their adult world will be changing constantly in terms of technology, and the internet is the key to all the knowledge and information available in the world today. Therefore, it is important that children learn at an early age to use the equipment with confidence, as they will need these skills throughout their studies and working lives. I think the main point is to make sure that young children do not overuse computers. Parents must ensure that their children learn to enjoy other kinds of activity and not simply sit at home, learning to live in a virtual world.
Some people believe that unpaid community service should be a compulsory part of high school programs, for example, working for a charity, improving the neighborhood, or teaching sports to younger children. To what extent do you agree or disagree?
It has been suggested that high school students should be involved in unpaid community services as a compulsory part of high school programs. Most of the colleges are already providing opportunities to gain work experience. However, these are not compulsory. In my opinion, sending students to work in community services is a good idea, as it can provide them with many valuable skills. Life skills are very important, and by doing voluntary work, students can learn how to communicate with others and work in a team, but also how to manage their time and improve their organisational skills. Nowadays, unfortunately, teenagers do not have many after-school activities. After-school clubs are no longer that popular, and students mostly go home and sit in front of the TV, browse the internet, or play video games. By giving them compulsory work activities with charitable or community organisations, they will be encouraged to do something more creative. Skills gained through compulsory work will not only be an asset on their CV, but also increase their employability. Students will also gain more respect towards work and money, as they will realise that it is not that easy to earn them, and hopefully will learn to spend them in a more practical way. Healthy life balance and exercise are strongly promoted by the NHS, and therefore, any kind of spare time charity work will prevent them from sitting and doing nothing. It could also possibly reduce the crime level in the high school age group. If students have activities to do, they will not be bored and come up with silly ideas which can be dangerous for them or their surroundings. In conclusion, I think this is a very good idea, and I hope this program will be put into action for high schools, colleges shortly. Some people believe that children's leisure activities must be educational, otherwise they are a complete waste of time. Do you agree or disagree?
Today, education has become a priority for many parents seeking to secure a good future for their children in this rapidly changing world. They believe that if their children apply themselves and work hard at school, then they will increase their opportunities for going to higher education and eventually getting a good job. Of course, they are right, and as access to the best education and best jobs is becoming more competitive, it is true that children have to make the best of their study time when they are young. However, the parents who do not allow their children sufficient free time for leisure activities outside school hours are misguided. Such activities are far from being a waste of time for the children simply because they are not academic. It is important to remember that children need to develop skills other than intellectual skills, and the best way to do this is through activities such as sports, games, and playing with other kids. If they cannot play make-believe games, how can they develop their imagination? How can they learn physical coordination or learn important social lessons about winning and losing if they do not practice any sports? Many children form strong personal relationships with the friends they play with, and without the opportunity to do this, they could grow up emotionally immature. Finally, I think it is also important to remember the children need to relax as well as work. If everything they do must have some educational or academic relevance, then they will soon get tired of studying altogether, which is the last thing that parents would want.
Music.
教育类范文24
Some people think that it is better to educate boys and girls in separate schools. Others, however, believe that boys and girls benefit more from attending mixed schools. Discuss both these views and give your own opinion.
Some countries have single-sex education models, while in others both single-sex and mixed schools coexist, and it is up to the parents or the children to decide which model is preferable. Some educationalists think that it is more effective to educate boys and girls in single-sex schools because they believe this environment reduces distractions and encourages pupils to concentrate on their studies. This is probably true to some extent. It also allows more equality among pupils and gives more opportunity to all those at the school to choose subjects more freely without gender prejudice. For example, a much higher proportion of girls studies science to a high level when they attend girls' schools than their counterparts in mixed schools do. Similarly, boys in single-sex schools are more likely to take cookery classes and to study languages, which are often thought of as traditional subjects for girls. On the other hand, some experts would argue that mixed schools prepare their pupils better for their future lives. Girls and boys learn to live and work together from an early age and are consequently not emotionally underdeveloped in their relationships with the opposite sex. They are also able to learn from each other and to experience different types of skill and talent that might be evident in a single-gender environment. Personally, I think that there are advantages to both systems. I went to a mixed school, but feel that I myself missed the opportunity to specialise in science because it was seen as the natural domain and career path for boys when I was a girl. So, because of that, I would have preferred to go to a girls' school. But hopefully times have changed and both genders of student can have equal chances to study what they want to in whichever type of school they attend. Some people think that universities should provide graduates with the knowledge and skills needed in the workplace. Others think that the true function of a university should be to give access to theoretical knowledge for its own sake, regardless of whether the course is useful to an employer. What, in your opinion, should be the main function of a university?
With the current economic instability, it is understandable that university students tend to regard universities primarily as institutions where they can acquire job skills. This is especially true when considering that tuition fees have risen each year. As a result, the pursuit of higher education today has become a substantial investment. University students and their parents expect a reasonable rate of return, which can be, to some degree, quantified by the job skills that are gained through higher education. However, merely equipping students with employment skills may defeat the very purpose of universities. As technology expands and evolves on a daily basis, it is unrealistic to believe that university administrators and faculty are able to determine the technical skill sets that employers will require in 3 or 4 years. University graduates will need sound knowledge about the theoretical frameworks, principles, and concepts in their fields of study to remain competitive in their future careers. There is also the risk that university graduates will not be capable of innovation at work, because truly innovative ideas tend to come from a synthesis of the fundamental theories underpinning their fields of work and the ability to apply these theories creatively on the job. Therefore, the main function of universities should be to build core curricula that stress the fostering of employment skills and, at the same time, provide students with electives focusing on the theoretical aspects of their fields of interest. Universities performing this function not only help students to gain job skills, but also ensure their capacity to apply these skills innovatively. Some people think that memorization of information by frequent repetition, rote learning, plays a negative role in most education systems. To what extent do you agree or disagree with this opinion?
For years, many educators have complained about the adverse effects of the traditional technique of rote memorization on schooling. I do not believe that their complaints are fully justified. It is true that an overemphasis on rote memorization may inhibit the learning process because this approach discourages students from critically understanding and analyzing the information delivered by their teachers. Essentially, education that overemphasizes rote learning makes students worship taught facts, just as the European clergy in medieval times did with the Holy Scriptures, and the Chinese test takers in the Ming and Qing dynasties did with the Confucian classics. However, I believe that rote learning still has some practical advantages, especially for young children. Children in daycare and kindergarten, as well as students at the lower elementary level of education, remember data far better than they understand abstract concepts and theories. As a learning process, committing information to memory through repetition is more realistic and efficient for children in this age group than comprehending abstractions. There are benefits to rote learning even for upper elementary, secondary, and university students whose main task is to develop more independent minds. For example, geometric axioms, geographic facts, and chemical equations all require a certain amount of rote memorization before they can be actively applied by the students. In conclusion, I believe that rote learning can be beneficial as a means of laying the groundwork for the acquisition of conceptual knowledge and for the development of critical thinking skills, rather than as an end in itself.